We turn to drugs because we're trapped. We turn to drugs and alcohol seeking an escape from the hell that the white man has trapped us in here in America. We are trapped. We know no way out. So we get a wine bottle. We get a whiskey bottle. Or we stick a needle in our arm. Or we smoke pot. Trying to find an escape from the hell that the white man has given us for 400 years here in America.
We declare our right on this earth to be a man, to be a human being, to be respected as a human being, to be given the rights of a human being in this society, on this earth, in this day, which we intend to bring into existence by any means necessary.
Blessed is he that readeth, and they that hear the words of this prophecy.
The message. Save your generation. You are listening to Save Your Generation on the Bill Radio Network.
The brother can't be reduced to a slogan by any means necessary. You can't reduce Martin Luther King to "I have a dream." This is the way they present our great ones to us. They collapse them into a convenient phrase, but if you are not intelligent enough to look behind the phrase to learn the man, the mind, the spirit, then you don't really know the man, and you're living just 25 years after the man and have a very weak or shallow knowledge of the man. You're just a few years from Dr. King and know very little about the man. Because these men who give you Malcolm, who give you Martin, they don't want you to continue their struggle. So you end up with a picture of the man on your wall, but you're not struggling the way he struggled. You're not living the life the way he lived it. You don't know nothing about that man's life.
Well, for me tonight on Save Your Generation, we're going to change that, and you're going to learn something about that man. The man that they called Malcolm X. He was the predominant civil rights, equal rights, black rights, whatever you want to call it, movement. In the 1960s, he was one of the main people, but he's not the main person that you read about or hear about in history books. You mainly hear about Dr. Martin Luther King. But still, even when you do hear about them, you don't really hear about them. You hear, "I have a dream," or you hear, "by any means necessary." But that doesn't tell you anything about the man, and I didn't really truly understand that until doing the research that I did for this show tonight here on Save Your Generation. It is Friday, not the 21st. That's why I'm doing this show, because on the 21st is the 42nd year since Malcolm X was assassinated at the Audubon Ballroom in New York City, and it's actually Friday, February 16th. All right, that's, what was I, reason for saying, yeah, the 21st, next Wednesday, be the 42nd year since Malcolm X was assassinated. So I wanted to do a show which did a little, I did one for the JFK assassination, so I figured this was just as important, even though you don't hear nearly as much as about it, you know. There's a bigger conspiracy behind this murder than there, well, no, I don't think you can get a bigger conspiracy than JFK, but it's at the same par, and it happened during the same, you know, not even 3 years apart. So you have to say, why were there so many assassinations in this period of time? It's because at that time it was the most hostile this country's ever been. There was so much, I mean, I don't have to tell you that. You know what happened during the 60s. So why was this man murdered? What was he doing that was so threatening to whoever would want to murder someone like that? Why did anyone want to murder JFK? They tell you that Lee Harvey Oswald was angry with the president or was just crazy. They tell you James Earl Ray was a racist and he wanted to kill Dr. King, or was he? They tell you that some black men came into the Audubon Ballroom who may or may not have been Muslims and shot Malcolm X. And, you know, all these people go to jail, but are they, as Oswald himself said, a patsy? Are these patsies that we're putting in prison? And who is really committing these crimes? So tonight we will discuss Malcolm X and what really happened, because he, to me, is, after doing all this, I've watched and read and looked up so probably hundreds of hours of stuff, honestly, and to try to condense it to this 2-hour show is going to be an impossibility. So what I suggest to all of you is to go out yourself after you hear this and after you get an interest, because I wasn't looking to really go all into this at the beginning of the month. I didn't even want to do any, I wasn't going to do any black history stuff, but then I in passing saw one thing about Malcolm X and it looked so interesting to me that I had to just know more about this person. And he is truly inspiring to hear his words and to see the videos of him and to think of how it is so powerful and inspiring to me today, 42 years after he's dead. I can't imagine how powerful and inspiring it was to those poor black people with no hope, with no money, with no nothing, living desolate lives and thinking, what am I going to do? Why am I like this? What's going on with my life? And then hearing this person speaking truth and saying, wow, that makes a lot of sense. Now I can understand why he had such a huge following. Now I can understand why the Nation of Islam in those days got such a huge, because what they're speaking is truth mixed with a tiny taste of fiction, and that tiny taste of fiction is enough to pollute the entire truth, but that truth will draw you in at first. And that's how any good cult or any good religious sect or any good movement will that's how they grab you, with that truth. They offer you that truth, but you have to look and see if they've the turd in the punch bowl. You gotta see if there's a turd in that punch bowl, as Alex Jones once put it brilliantly, because it is. But that's what we're going to be discussing tonight, and I hope you're up for it, and I hope you're interested in learning something, because it's not what you expect. And this goes so much deeper, as everything does. You know that if you tried to present the case for 9/11 in 2 hours, there'd be so much that you left out, because there's so much that has happened, and it took so much happening in order for this to build up to this. So there's no way that you can ever fully explain something. So what you can do is that you can offer a taste, and that person takes that little sampling of your buffet and then goes out and purchases its own goodies to have. You know what I'm saying? You like that analogy out there? All right. Let's just go to some clips, because that's all you can really do, is to truly get a grasp of who this man was. That's what I want you to do. And why someone would want to kill him. You would have to hear the man speak. And you have to take into thought that this is happening now in a time period where black people are thought of as subhuman, literally. I know some people still think that way now, but that way it was the common, not only usual, but it was, if you didn't think that way, you were weird. So to have someone black be on television speaking the way that he does, saying the things that he does, was, I gotta say, frightening, but frightening doesn't even put it into words. So, you just, it's kinda, what's that movie that Stephen King wants to make? Nigga with a Brain? That was the movie. Malcolm X was letting people see that scary movie. That's a scary movie. Nigga with a Brain. So, let's listen to this, Nigga with a Brain, because he was unbelievable. Actually, before I play this first Malcolm clip, I want to talk a little bit about who that first guy you heard who opened the show was. Louis Farrakhan. He used to be known as Louis X back in the 60s. When you research Malcolm, you can't really understand Malcolm until you understand who that man, Louis Farrakhan, is. So that's someone else that we're going to be taking a look at tonight. Some of the things that he said. Because he was, as Betty Shabazz, who was the husband of El Hajj Malik El Shabazz, also known as Malcolm X, she believes that he was involved in his murder. So I don't know why she would say something like that, because I thought that Louis Farrakhan was, he's currently, if you don't know this, the leader of the Nation of Islam. He took over when Malcolm X was assassinated. I'd always thought that he was his friend, he was his good buddy. So we're going to look at that, because you have to examine it all. You have to look at why the CIA would want him dead. You have to look at why the Nation of Islam would want him dead. So first we're going to look at why the CIA and the United States government would be terrified of a person, black or white, who was saying this stuff on national TV in front of millions and millions of people. Because you couldn't get on TV and say this. I mean, you probably could get on TV and say this stuff now, but people wouldn't take it seriously, just like how Alex Jones gets on national TV with millions and millions of people and gets the opportunity to say something and people still don't take it seriously. So I think in those days, people were desperate and they could more clearly see the enemy, so that when someone was telling you it, it was simple to hear. And since people like us can see the enemy and understand what's happening, when people like Alex Jones speak, we can see that it's truth. Other people, they're still blinded. But maybe Malcolm can wake him up. Maybe these words, 42 years, almost 50 years later, will be waking people up. It woke me up, and it truly changed my life just hearing these. And it sounds weird to say that watching and reading about someone can change your life, but that's really all you do. And that's what anything is. If you read the Bible, that should change your life. You're just reading about some people. So if you're studying these things and these events and it's not changing your life, then you're not looking at them correctly. You need to look at it with a more discerning eye.
Malcolm X, I think perhaps we ought to turn to Malcolm X, who wanted to comment on that.
Yes, on this white power structure. When you say power structure, I know you mean the white power structure, because that's all we have in America. And the white power structure today is just as much interested in perpetuating slavery as the white power structure was 100 years ago. Only now they use modern methods of doing so. And realizing that the black people in this country are waking up and becoming filled with a desire to be looked upon as men and as human beings, the white power structure, to slow down that struggle for freedom and human dignity, uses tricks. 100 years ago, they could do it with chains. Today, they use tricks. And one of the tricks that they've invented is this token integration. To get Negro, so-called Negro leaders to accept a few token crumbs of integration that don't solve any problem for the masses of black people in this country whatsoever, but it does make the hand-picked Negroes be satisfied, to slow down the cry of the masses. And a good example of that is, as soon as the spirit of rebellion or revolution began to spread among the masses of black people in this country, and they began to take an active part, and they showed that they weren't confined to this nonviolent approach, then the government or the power structure began to sit up and take notice. And now, as you said earlier, the president is talking about new legislation and to put it, take it out of the streets and put it back in the courts. Why, as long as it's in the streets, it's in the hands of the masses of black people, who will not compromise or who cannot be bought out. But when you put it back in the courts, then that puts it back into the hands of the hand-picked Negro leaders, who will allow the judges and the other persons that are involved in this white power structure to slow them down. It's only a trick. And as long as the masses of black people are involved in the struggle for freedom, not integration, but freedom, the respect as human beings, respect as men, and show that they're willing to die to be respected as men, then the power structure sits up and takes notice. But as long as this mass element is led, and when I say led, I use led in quotes, actually contained by Uncle Tom Negro leaders who hold them back, who tell them turn the other cheek, and things like that, then the white power structure isn't worried at all. They're only worried when they know that the masses of black people are ready to explode. And in exploding, it will destroy some of the furniture in their house. And then they react accordingly.
Now, when white people hear a black person say that something is because white anything, they immediately tune it out and don't want to hear what else is coming or what the point of it was. So I'm just going to say on Malcolm's behalf here, when he says white power structure, when he says white, He's not just speaking racist rhetoric and saying, like, oh, the white man keeping us down. He's speaking out because he saw that only black people were impoverished and poor and didn't have rights, yet white people were supposedly free. So he saw that the people were all in power happened to be white, so therefore, who are they doing the benefit for? Obviously, for white people. So it's a white power structure. But just because today, now what he was really speaking out about, I mean, if you want to get technical, you got to think about this. He was saying that what this government system truly wants is slavery. And while they don't use whips and chains, he says that they use other means to get it, which is, of course, mind control. Because you got to understand that these people truly believed that they had no rights and that they were two-thirds of a human being, because that's what was the law. So they truly thought that they should have been, you know, a slave, just like people now truly think that we should be slaves and just be made to worship corporations and be slaves for them. But no, that's not what the truth is, and that's what Malcolm was saying. He was telling everyone, like, no, we are men, we are human beings, and we should be equal. And if the laws say that, I know you didn't think that any black people could read, but I can, and your laws say that we're all men and we're equal, so why is it not being done this way? So, you know, he was telling the truth and exposing things, and can you believe that he was saying this on TV? They couldn't. So what he was really exposing back then was the New World Order. Think about it. That's exactly what they do and how they work and what they were. Even back then, you know, the New World Order existed. That's what he was exposing. He only referred to it as the white power structure because he didn't understand that it was bigger than that. But just because today the New World Order incorporates some of those Uncle Tom House Negroes, as he put it, like Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell, and all those people, don't think that it's not still just a white power structure. They're just there for show, for a little bit of color, and the Obamas of the world. It's still a white power structure, but it's the New World Order who's doing it. It's not your average white friend. It's not anybody on Revere. You know what I mean? So when he speaks about white people, just take that into consideration and understand from the time period when he was speaking about this stuff in the 60s, when black people didn't have the same freedom as your average person does, supposedly today, which that can be debated, and it will be debated. Let's hear what Malcolm has to say more.
Minister Malcolm, the thing that I thought might be good for starting it off is to talk about one of the most pervasive beliefs in the general society about the Nation of Islam, and that is that it is an organization dedicated to the use of violent means to attain its goals. The question I have is, how true is this, and why do you think it persists in society?
Well, the Muslims who have accepted the religion of Islam and follow the religious guidance of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad have never bombed any churches, have never murdered any little girls, as was done in Birmingham, have never lynched anybody, have never at any time been guilty of initiating any aggressive acts of violence during the entire 33 years or more that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has been teaching us. The charge of violence against us actually stems from the guilt complex that exists in the conscious and subconscious minds of most white people in this country. They know that they've been violent in their brutality against Negroes, and they feel that someday the Negro is going to wake up and try and do unto them as they have done unto, do unto the whites as the whites have done unto us. We aren't a violent group. We do, we are taught by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad to be, to obey the law, to respect everyone who respects us. We're taught to display courtesy, to be polite, but we're also taught that at any time anyone in any way inflicts or seeks to inflict violence upon us, we are within our religious rights to retaliate in self-defense to the maximum degree of our ability. We never initiate any violence upon anyone. But if anyone attacks us, we reserve the right to defend ourselves. So to accuse us of being violent is like accusing a man who is being lynched, who is being hung on a tree, simply because he struggles vigorously against his lyncher. The victim is accused of violence, but the lyncher is never accused of violence. And I only point this out because the various racist groups that are set up in this country by whites and who have actually practiced violence against blacks for 400 years are never associated or identified or made synonymous with the term violence. But whites speak of Muslims almost synonymously with violence. Whenever Muslims are mentioned by them, violence is brought up. But it's not connected with any other group. This is a sort of a propaganda tactic, or what I would call psychological warfare, to in some way make the image of the Muslims in this country be a violent image rather than a religious image.
Let me play that again in case you missed that.
This is a sort of a propaganda tactic, or what I would call psychological warfare, to in some way make the image of the Muslims in this country be a violent image rather than a religious image.
What did I tell you? Malcolm X saw through the New World Order exactly for what it was. He saw the big picture. He saw it all. Even to this day, what they're still doing to Muslims is making it seem that it's violence instead of a religion. Is this not insanity that we are going through? History repeats, and it's repeating so vividly that I can't even believe it at times. And I think that's why I've been so into studying Malcolm X, because studying Malcolm X, you're actually studying what's happening right now. So I hope you're all really excited, and I'm excited to hear more, because you can't really understand Malcolm X until you hear him, what he has to say to you, because they have nothing to say back to him, because they can't debate him. And if you hear him in these debates, I'm just going to play more of this. Him versus any, he goes up against all of the talking heads of the day, kind of like the Bill O'Reillys of today, and they are just flabbergasted and have nothing to really, they can't debate him whatsoever because he's so dead on with everything he's saying. Psychological warfare. It is. That's what's happening. This is a propaganda campaign. He just spits it out, the truth, it just flies out of his mouth. Let's hear more.
What's interesting is that members of the Nation of Islam have not used violence even when black Americans were attacked. How do you account for this? Does this in any way contradict some of the basic premises of your movement?
I don't know how you mean.
Well, you maintain, for example, that you will not or that you should not use violence unless you are attacked by the white man. And I think we can note in the last several years, certainly, dozens and dozens and dozens of instances in which Negroes have been attacked, killed in some instances.
You mean in these demonstrations?
These demonstrations and the bombings, for example, recently in Birmingham, where they killed four little Negro girls. And what interests me is the fact is that the Nation of Islam has not done anything to retaliate.
I think you should be happy.
The important thing is, does your lack of action contradict any of your basic principles?
I'll explain it. You should be happy that Muslims who follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, number one, don't believe in any form of integration, and who and believe that every mention of the word integration by whites, whether it be from the mouth of Kennedy on down to the mouth of the lowest, raggediest white liberal in the street who is beatnik-like involving himself in these integration efforts.
Malcolm is so funny, dirty, white, hippie, liberal, beatniks. That to me is so, but that is the only people who did help black people. Those are the only people even now today who you really see in the truth movement. I mean, some of the conservative people, I guess you'd call the others out there, but people that I know, people my friends, they're the dirty, white, hippie, beatnik liberals that that he's talking about that are helping him. But the thing with the Nation of Islam is that they didn't think that anyone was sincere in helping the black people, which I think, you know, you gotta pick your, I mean, when Kennedy says it, yeah, I can think that that's a bunch of bullcrap because that's what politicians do. But when you have people that are in the streets with you that are actually grinding and fighting for this, I think you got to say then, all right, maybe this white dude is down for the cause. That's what I would have said. But all right, let's continue with this, because anytime Malcolm's speaking to someone, you really, You got to think that this is not just a podcast going out to a handful of people. He's on national television saying this in front of the entire United States of America, millions of people. You know, this was a really famous person here. And in respect to the Muslims not being violent and going after anyone, yeah, there had been black people beaten, murdered, as I'm sure you know, after slavery ended for about 100 years, from about 1860 to the 1960s, blacks were still just being tortured and beaten and killed and slaughtered and murdered without anyone doing anything. The police didn't help because the police were partly doing it. Most of the time, have you ever seen the video where the police are sicking the dogs on the black people and just biting them, just, arr! And that was what you dealt with then. And the Nation of Islam was saying, guess what? You try that, we're going to be shooting back from now on. And that's what anybody in the truth movement now is saying. That's what Ed Brown's saying. You try that Waco stuff, we're going to be shooting back. So Malcolm X was, I think, the pioneer of the truth movement, if you want to get real.
If we believed in it, we would integrate. And we would fight anybody who got in our way or made any effort whatsoever to stop us from integrating. If we really believe that the law of the land, the Supreme Court, and other so-called judicial bodies were for real when they talked about integration, we would integrate. And knowing that the law was on our side, and any effort we made to demonstrate toward integration, why, we would know the law should be on our side if it's the law of the land. If it is the law of the land, then the demonstrators are within the law. And the discriminators are against the law. Mm-hmm. But to show you the hypocrisy of the law, when Negroes demonstrate for integration, instead of arresting the discriminators, the law arrests the demonstrators.
And what happens today at peace demonstrations when you go somewhere? Oh, that's right, you get sent in these little concentration camps if you're at the Democratic, the Republican National Convention in New York City. They'll just put you in camps. Or they'll take you to a free speech zone. It's the same thing. History is, I mean, is anyone awake?
So this is a foolish move on the part of Negroes. And when you foolishly get yourself involved with an enemy, then whatever comes upon you, that's your business. As Muslims, we believe that separation is the best way and the only sensible way, not integration. And but on the other hand, when we see our people being brutalized by white bigots, white racists, we think that they are foolish to allow themselves to be beaten and brutalized and do nothing whatsoever to protect themselves. They are foolish. They should have the right to defend themselves against any attack made against them by anyone. If a dog is biting a black man, the black man should kill the dog. Whether the dog is a police dog, a hound dog, or any kind of dog. If a dog is sick on a black man, when that black man is doing nothing but trying to take advantage of what the government says is supposed to be his, then that black man should kill that dog. Or any two-legged dog who sticks the dog on him.
Should other black men help that particular person who was attacked?
I think you'll find, sir, that there will come a time when black people wake up and become intellectually independent enough to think for themselves, as other humans are intellectually independent enough to think for themselves, then the black man will think like a black man. And he will feel for other black people. And this new thinking and feeling will cause black people to stick together. And then at that point, you'll have a situation where when you attack one black man, you are attacking all black men. And this type of black thinking will cause all black people to stick together. And this type of thinking also will bring an end to the brutality inflicted upon black people by white people. And it is the only thing that will bring an end to it. No federal court, state court, or city court will bring an end to it. It's something that the black man has to bring an end to himself.
You're listening to Revere Radio Network, the worldwide home of free speech and the number one activist site on the internet, revereradio.net. Step into our world.
They get a terror storm alone because they're afraid of it. I know you have incredible activist listeners, Jack. People over there at Revere Radio. I know you have incredible activist listeners, Jack. People over there at Revere Radio. I know you have incredible activist listeners, Jack. People over there at Revere Radio. I know you have incredible activist listeners, Jack. People over there at Revere Radio. Revere Radio.
Revere Radio. Not for fronting ass niggas.
Revere Radio is not intended for fronting ass crackers either.
All right. What Malcolm just described right there as black, quote-unquote, black thinking, that is to say, when a black man, what he described is when a black man sees another black man being beaten or wrong in some way, because this hadn't been happening during these times, black people would just walk by and see this stuff happening and not help someone else. But I have a feeling that if a white person saw a black man beating up someone, they would run over and help him. So Malcolm was saying, like, you know, black people don't help each other because they're not using black thinking, which is, if you see another black man being beaten or hurt, you should try to come help him. And instinctively, not thinking about it, you would just go and help him. And someone saying that and speaking out like that, you gotta think, in 1963, this is gonna terrify the government to have people speaking like this. Like, imagine if everyone caught on to this. They, oh, what would happen if all the black people said, hey, we're not gonna let white people just beat on us anymore. What if we let that happen? So groups like the Black Panthers and the Nation of Islam and all the other small, tiny groups, which you never heard about, but then you eventually heard about them later when they became the Bloods and the Crips. See, all those, quote, gangs that sprung up later, these are just angry black people with guns who used to be fighting for civil rights, but now, since they got distracted from the true task, are now just fighting with each other. And it didn't used to be a silly turf war. They weren't just warring for some small scrap of land. They were really fighting for something real. But those groups, as you may or may not know, were infiltrated and disbanded by the CIA. So that's why they don't exist anymore. The Black Panthers, all of them. You notice there's not one. The only one that still exists is what? The Nation of Islam. And why is that? Well, you'll find out later when we get into that. That is why the Nation of Islam to this day is powerful. Louis Farrakhan, they have their Million Man March and all of that, and there's a very good reason why. But if all the blacks had started using this black thinking, as Malcolm put it, there would have been a real possibility of a true revolution happening in America, a true social and political system change, and it would have happened the true way a revolution happens, which is by force. And the United States government saw that. They were not idiots. So they did what they knew what they had to do. And aside from people like Martin Luther King Jr., who wasn't going to cause a true revolution, that's why they backed him, because they saw that if it was nonviolent, then they could just do it on paper but not actually have true, because that's already what was happening. But if you have it in sight but not in mind or in heart, if you do something out in the open but truly in your heart and in your mind, you're really the exact opposite. It's not really a true change. But Malcolm X was talking about a true change, and he was talking about the truth of the conditions of the world, and that, you know, was really going to incite a revolution. But if you think about what he was talking about, black thinking, that really isn't black thinking at all. What that is just maybe humanism, I guess it could be described as. You see somebody and you think that because they're of your same species, then you're going to help them. But or you can even simplify it even more and say it's like the Bible says, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. If you see someone in trouble, you wouldn't want someone to not help you if you were in trouble, so you would say, all right, I'm going to go help them, because I'm going to do unto others as I would want done to me. So that's not black thinking. It's just Malcolm had to put it this way in those times, because that was a situation that people could relate to and see and not be some type of parable that they're not going to understand. It was something right in their face that they could see. These people were being oppressed. They had nothing, but the white person who was just across the street from them did, and they were allowed everything. Why? Why was this? Was it because no more of skin color? Is that why this is really happening? Or was it about deeper things than that. So we're going to get into more of that. Let's listen to what else Malcolm was talking about, because he didn't speak only about racial issues, which he did, but he was exposing the war. He was exposing the way that the system, the education system, was flawed. And to have someone speaking out about that was unbelievable, because everybody in America, white America, thought that those things were the greatest and the best in the world. This is America, the land of the free. How could he be saying these bad things about America? But now, in 2007, we all know that everything that he was saying was exactly right.
Minister Malcolm, let me, on the basis of your two remarks, ask a double-pronged question. One, is it then your assertion that the laws with respect to how Negroes are supposed to have equal opportunity and equal rights in this country are not meaningful or believed by whites? And secondly, what then is your opinion and attitude toward the civil rights movement in general, and particularly the Reverend Martin Luther King and his philosophy of nonviolent direct action?
If the white people really passed meaningful laws, it would not be necessary to pass any more laws. There are already enough laws on the law books to protect an American citizen. You only need additional laws when you're dealing with someone who is not regarded as an American citizen. But whites are so hypocritical. They don't want to admit that this black man is not a citizen. So they classify him as a second-class citizen to get around making him a real citizen. If he was a real citizen, you'd need no more laws. You'd need no civil rights legislation. Civil rights, when you have civil rights, you have citizenship. It's automatic. White people don't need laws to protect their citizenship because they're citizens. But they don't want to tell us we're not citizens. And at the same time, they don't want to pass laws that are meaningful enough to protect us as if we were citizens. And the Supreme Court desegregation decision is the best example I know. That's a law from the Supreme Court. 10 years have gone by. No desegregated schools. It hasn't been implemented beyond, I think, 9% in 10 years. So this just shows you the hypocrisy of the American white man. They talk out of both sides of their mouth. And for this reason, we who are Muslims, that is, who believe in the religion of Islam, who believe in God, we don't believe that black people will ever get any laws, get any problem with laws being passed or new persons being put in office, white liberals being put in office. There is nothing that the white man will ever do to bring about true, sincere citizenship or civil rights recognition for black people in this country. Nothing will they ever do. They will always talk it, but they won't practice it. And with the Supreme Court, if the NAACP can tell me that they want a desegregation decision for me 10 years ago, but yet the schools haven't been desegregated, as I say, this is a victory with no victory. It's a victory that you can talk about, but it's a victory you can't show me. So if you represent the NAACP and you are telling me about this great victory you won for me, when I look at you, I have to conclude that either you have been duped yourself or else you are trying to dupe me. And in most instances where the civil rights struggle is involved, there is no civil rights leader can point to me one concrete gain, practical gain, that black people have made in the civil rights field in this country, not only during the past 10 years, but during the past 100 years.
Truth, plain and simple. And I wanted to stop this. We got to continue through, though. There's so much to cover, but I have to just speak about something Ron Paul did, which relates to what Malcolm X first said in this little segment. He said that if they passed meaningful laws, you wouldn't need any more laws. If the Constitution was actually upheld, if the Constitution, which was something that the laws and everything else was truly based on, then you wouldn't need any other laws. And recently, I found out that Ron Paul has put into Congress another bill for the legalization of industrial hemp. And here we again, have a case of the same thing. If the laws were actually meaningful, you wouldn't need a new law to legalize hemp, because first of all, the cannabis prohibition marijuana law would not be in existence, because the Constitution says, if you've ever read the First Amendment to the Bill of Rights, it reads that Congress shall make no law prohibiting the free exercise of religion. Now, if you happen to believe in the Bible, or even if you don't believe in the Bible, but still believe in a creator that has created all plants, animals, and humans, then you would believe that he has created the plant that is classified as cannabis sativa. However, we do not call it by its true name in this country. We call it by a Mexican slang term, quite frankly a racist term if you ask me, marijuana, which is nothing more than a piece of propaganda that was thrown on this plant in order to make it seem scary to the American public. You all know that, however. I just wanted to interject that because Ron Paul, while he may be in the right place, or he may just be looking to get the, quote, liberal vote, since he is a Republican, by throwing something like that in, who knows? Who knows what he's doing? But the fact of the matter is that if the Constitution was upheld, if you read Genesis, the first book, verse 29, it says, God created every herb bearing seed.
And God said, behold, I have given you every herb-bearing seed which is upon the face of all the earth, every herb-bearing seed which is upon the face of all the earth.
Now, I'm not a scientist, but I'm not an idiot either, and I know that every herb-bearing seed on the face of the earth, cannabis sativa is one of those herbs bearing seed. Fact of the matter, it shouldn't be need for more laws, just like Malcolm has just said. But let's continue, see what else he would say. What would he say about this? Well, he says that pot is something an escape, as the first clip I played, and, you know, maybe that's why the creator made this plant, to be able to escape from this hell, this literal hell on earth that he said the white man has gotten him into. But it's really, truly, who's made hell on earth? Satan. And you can read, the Bible says that. It says that Satan, Lucifer, was cast out of heaven onto earth. So when that happened, earth became hell, because it's where Satan reigns and lives, right? Doesn't that make sense to you? So we are in hell right now, and we need to find some sort of escape. And this is a temporary escape, but technically, if you really want to get serious about it, cannabis doesn't let you escape. Alcohol might, drugs might, but cannabis will really just make you think. And that's actually something I've heard people say that they didn't like about cannabis, is that it does make you think and discern things. But that's also, again, what the Bible says about cannabis. Hebrews 5, it says that strong meat, go to the rest of that verse in Genesis 1:29. What does every herb-bearing seed be compared? It said, to you it shall be for meat. So meat there, strong meat, this is a stronger herb which is going to help us discern. And once you discern that you're living in hell and that there's no way to escape here by earthly means, then you realize that you can only escape with the Creator. An eternal escape when you are saved by His second appearance on this earth.
But strong meat belongeth to them that are of full age, even those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern both good and evil.
Save your generation.
We did not think that it was a coincidence that 120 of the whites on this plane came from the state of Georgia, a state that has the worst record in the history of America for the mistreatment of black people in this country.
Worse than Mississippi?
They maybe are a little less. Mississippi is a little less hypocritical today than Georgia, but both of them are still practicing the same thing. Now the whites in Georgia bite Negroes with a smile, whereas they used to bite them with a growl. But they're still being bitten, and we don't think that it is any worse to be bitten with a smile than it is to be bitten with a growl.
Mr. Calvert.
While we're on the subject of Mississippi, what is your organization's position of what happened in Mississippi in the past
such as
months?
What?
Such as the James Meredith incident and the enrollment of him in the university.
Well, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad wants justice for every one of the 20 million so-called Negroes. And to just take one Negro and stick him in college with the aid of the 15,000 troops and at a cost of $6,000 is a disgrace. It's a waste of taxpayers' money. It's a farce. It's hypocrisy. because if it's right for one Negro to be forced into that university, then every Negro in the state of Mississippi who is qualified has the same right to go to that university. And if the government is not ready and willing to enforce the right of every Negro in the state of Mississippi, then, in my opinion, sir, it's only hypocrisy to pretend that they are for justice by pushing one Negro in and blowing it up all over the world to make it look like they're solving the problem, when millions of black people in that state are still going to segregated schools and getting an inferior education.
Does your organization encourage members to attempt to enter schools that have been known as all white?
The Honorable Elijah Muhammad doesn't discourage us from attending white schools, but he does say that it is better for us to go to our own schools, and after we have a thorough knowledge of ourselves, of our own kind, and racial dignity has been instilled within us, then we can go to anyone's school and we'll still retain our race pride, our racial dignity, and we will be able to avoid the subservient inferiority complex that most Negroes have or are, that is instilled within most Negroes who receive this sort of integrated education.
Well, you have a private school operating here in Chicago, at least, and possibly elsewhere, and it's been a subject of controversy lately. What is the acceptance of people who come out of your private schools into schools of higher learning?
Yes, we have many students who have graduated from the University of Islam on 54th and Greenwood that are now attending other schools. In fact, just as an example, one of Mr. Muhammad's sons never attended any school in his life but the University of Islam. He later attended DePaul University. He also attended the University of Chicago, and at present he's attending Al-Azhar University in Cairo, one of the oldest Muslim schools in the world. And his daughter-in-law also, who went to school here, is attending the University of Cairo. And then we have other students who have graduated that are attending other colleges and universities in this country. And in our school, we never have any delinquency problems. We never have any dropouts. We never have any disrespect for authority or disrespect for parents. We don't have any kind of juvenile delinquency. All of the things that the regular school system is complaining about, the critics and the most severe critics of Mr. Muhammad have to admit that we aren't plagued with those same problems in our own school.
And I wonder why. As you know, everybody knows that the education system is set up to be just that, to be something that produces failures, not actually produces success. And the Muslims were doing something completely opposite and saying, all right, we understand that the white man's system is all types of messed up, so we're just going to do our own thing. And exposing that and showing it in front of the world is what made Malcolm X so special and such a threat, because they were exposing the American hypocrisy, and they did not. The New World Order couldn't have that. Everything that we say today is what Malcolm X and people who knew the truth, like the Black Panthers, the Huey Newtons, the Fred Hamptons, and Kwame Torres of the world have been saying since the 60s. And now, it's just like, for some reason, only the black people caught it back then, but now it's starting to spread down to everybody. Everybody can see it. Everybody's seeing through the matrix, but only the black people back then could peer through it and understand what was really happening. And I think that was because they were the ones who were directly affected. People don't really give a crap unless it's directly affecting you. And those who are the ones who it could hit home with them because they saw it in their own neighborhoods and they saw it happening. Before we continue, I think we should listen to a song right now. It's been like 45 minutes of Malcolm, but no song, so let's have one.
Of false pretense. of sorrow. Water the downpressed. They'll eat the bread of sad tomorrow. Water the downpressed.
Downpresser, but you're the one being kept down, I'm sure, because none of us are elitist, none of us are rich, just blabbages. We're not that. We are the oppressed. We are the ones being held down, and as much as you think that you might got some money and have whatever, you have nothing compared to the elitist. You're nothing but a peasant. That's exactly what you are, and you need to check out Dirty Thoughts of a Dirty Peasant, brand new show here on RevereRadio.net, done by the vocalist guitarist of the band Sloppy Meat Eaters. You can find out more about that band at myspace.com/sloppymeateaters. Joshua Chambers, I've had him as a guest on Save Your Generation, and he does an absolutely great show. I'm so happy that he's joined the RevereRadio.net team, and I can't wait to hear what else he has in store. That's Dirty Thoughts of a Dirty Peasant, or Dirty Thoughts from a Dirty Peasant. Either way, we're all dirty peasants, and we all got these thoughts, and they're going to be classified as dirty, as wrong, as hateful, because we have a dissenting view, and we want to have true freedom and justice, not this facade, not this illusion, and we can see through it, and he definitely can, so you better be checking that out. That Thursday nights on RevereRadio.net, I don't know the exact time, but you should just be listening to Revere 24/7, and then you'll definitely catch it. And then you'll hear all the great shows that are on this network, including this one, Save Your Generation, Friday nights, 8 p.m. on the Eastern Tide. For now, who knows? Who knows what things may develop? Maybe a time change over at Revere? Who knows? The possibilities are absolutely endless for Revere Radio Network, and I'm so thankful to be able to be a part of it. And I hope you out there listening are grateful for what Rob does. And to show your gratitude, you should head over to revereradio.net and give a donation to keep Revere on the air and to keep the truth being told about things that have occurred throughout history that you may have never heard of before. Maybe you never knew all this stuff about Malcolm X, the way he spoke out against the false education system, the way he spoke out against the fake laws and how they don't follow the Constitution. The Constitution, people, even to this very day, you get stuff like the Patriot Act passed, which directly contradicts the Constitution, but where's our Malcolm X speaking up? There are some, but none that get to speak up on TV constantly and have public attention. There is no real celebrity. Only in this truth movement we have a celebrity as Alex Jones, but no one is a really big, loud, vocal mouthpiece who's speaking out against all these things the way Malcolm X was. And he wasn't just speaking out against, you know, for black people. He was speaking out for everyone. He just didn't know that he was, truly. He was speaking out for the freedom of all human beings. As Dr. King once put it, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And, you know, I could probably round off. Before studying this month, I'm so happy that I chose to do Black History Month shows for this month, because I'm learning so much, and you should want to learn so much. I could probably recite so many Dr. King speeches and Malcolm X speeches, because I've been listening to literally hundreds of hours of stuff, and you should just go out and see what's out there, and see what these people have said, because just as you quote the people from 1770, give me liberty and give me death, these people are saying things just as relevant, but they're more relevant now, because this is only 40 years ago, not 200 years ago. What was happening 40 years ago is still happening now, because people haven't understood what was going on, but we can see it, because we're in this movement, in this truth thinking outside of the box already group, so we can get it. And Malcolm X got it. And I'm just going to play some more stuff that he... There's so much that he saw through. He saw through every piece of the Matrix. And at every chance, he was on TV talking about it. And that's why... One of the reasons... I hope we get time. I really want to build this base, is because... As Farrakhan said, you can't just break the man down to by any means necessary. He was so much more than that. And I want to just give you an... basic outline of all the different areas that Malcolm spoke out about, and why this man needed to be silenced, because his mouth was too big. It was too big. So let's get more into Brother Minister Malcolm, or his new name, El-Haj Malik El-Shabazz.
The most active person in the spreading of the black Muslim movement is Elijah Muhammad's second in command, who calls himself Malcolm X. And Malcolm X is our guest today on City Desk. Across the desk, our panelists this week are NBC newsmen Charles McCune, Floyd Calver, and Len O'Connor. And Mr. X, may I begin by asking you, if you will please, outline for us the platform and policies of the Muslim organization.
Well, the platform that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, our religious leader, stands upon is the platform of complete freedom, justice, and equality for the 20 million black people, or so-called Negroes here in America. And he teaches us that because of the seriousness of the condition that our people now find themselves in, that it's absolutely impossible to solve our problems with means other than religion. And he teaches us that the religion of Islam is the only religion that will instill within our people the incentive to stand on our own feet, and instead of trying to force ourselves upon whites, or force ourselves into the white society, or blame the white man for our predicament and constantly beg him for what he has, he says that the only way that we can solve our problem is to unite together among ourselves, among our own kind, clean ourselves up, rid ourselves of the evils that we've become addicted to here in this society, and try and solve our problem ourselves.
And I referred to the popular belief that the Muslims preach a hatred for the white race. You do not subscribe to this, then?
No. I've never heard the Honorable Elijah Muhammad teach or preach hatred for anyone. He preaches hatred against evil, against drunkenness, against dope addiction, against poverty, and against having to beg for the things that a man is supposed to have. But I've never heard him teach us or any of his followers hatred toward any human being.
Do you think that some of his followers possibly then have misinterpreted the word that they've heard and follow a practice of hatred for the white race?
I don't think that any Muslim practices hatred toward anyone. We have businesses around the country that are patronized by whites, and we have many businesses here in Chicago, and our customers are white as well as our own kind. And a white person can go into any of these places of business, and he'll have to admit that he is treated with more respect, and he finds more dignity there than he will find among the so-called Negroes who profess to be teaching love for everyone.
You've referred to the Negroes, the so-called Negroes. You find some fault with this description,
yes.
I gather.
Mr. Muhammad teaches us that Negro is a term that was applied to us during slavery by the slave master. And right today, it's a term that is used only to point out the descendant of slaves. It's never used for black people, period. Africans can come to this country. They aren't called Negroes. And if they are called Negroes, they resent it. So if Negro meant black, as we've been taught, it would be a term that would be applicable to or pliable to everyone. But he says that it is something that means a slave or something who is, it means something that has been left out of society, politically, economically, educationally, and otherwise.
You don't think of it as an anthropological term?
Definitely. It's not an anthropological term. It's a slave term. And it was a term that was invented in America and was used by the slave makers, slave traders, and slave masters and attached to the property or the chattel or merchandise that our people represented in that particular day.
Mr. O'Connor.
What is your real name?
Malcolm. Malcolm X.
Is that your legal name?
As far as I'm concerned, it's my legal name.
Have you been to court to establish the
story? I didn't have to go to court to be called Murphy or Jones or Smith. Excuse me for answering you this way.
That's all right.
If a Chinese person were to say his name was Patrick Murphy, you would look at him like he's insane, because Murphy is an Irish name, a European name, or the name that has a Caucasian or white background. And a yellow person, Chinese is a yellow man, and he has nothing to do or no connection whatsoever with the name Murphy. And if it doesn't look proper for a person who is yellow or Chinese to be walking around named Murphy or Jones or Johnson or Bunch or Powell, I think it would be just as improper for a black person or the so-called Negro in this country, as we're taught by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, to walk around with these names. And therefore, he teaches us that during slavery, the same slave master who owned us put his last name on us to denote that we were his property. So that when you see a Negro today who's named Johnson, if you go back in his history, you'll find that he was once his grandfather, or one of his forefathers was owned by a white man who was named Johnson. His name is Bunch. His grandfather was owned by a white man that was named Bunch.
Would you mind telling me what your father's last name was?
My father didn't know his last name. My father got his last name from his grandfather, and his grandfather got it from his grandfather, who got it from the slave master. The real names of our people were destroyed during slavery.
Was there any line, any point in the genealogy of your family when you did have to use the last name? And if so, what was it?
The last name of my forefathers was taken from them when they were brought to America and made slaves. And then the name of the slave master was given, which we refuse. We reject that name today.
You won't even tell me what your father's supposed last name was or gifted last name was?
I never acknowledge it whatsoever.
Can you believe the smugness of that guy? His gifted name? I guess it's a real gift to be a slave, so you get a name. That's really his gifted. Come on, think about that. Think about how absurd that is. But when you think about deeper into it, I'd really never heard this theory before, and so I looked into it, and fact is that this goes further back even to Europe. When people would own the royal people, the majesties, the bullcrap, whatever they are, royalty elitist, when they would have their servants and whatever, in order to distinguish who they came from, they would be gifted their last name, the same name as the people. So that's, they weren't part of their family, but they could just distinguish of who owned who. And when they came to America, these Europeans did the same thing to their slaves, to these African slaves. So what they did was they gave them all the same last name. So that way, if they got away or anything happened to the person's name, they would know who they belonged to, where to go, where they get them back. So that is an absolutely astonishing fact, I think, personally, for two reasons. Number one, you think about that the reason they're doing this is just like a brand, like cattle. If you take cattle, what you do is you take your whatever your brand or your mark or your name is and you stamp it on them. So they did, it's the same thing, but they're just not putting it on you physically, they're just putting it on you mentally. So all of these people are walking around literally still to this day owned. And not only black people, but white people as well. I would say that if you're European and you weren't an elitist, you're probably from a family that was maybe, I mean, it's a possibility unless you directly know your genealogy. I would say you're probably a slave and your name comes from slavery. It's crazy to think about, and it's had me thinking that, you know, like, does my name come from a slave? Am I a slave? You really have to consider that and think, now I understand why Muslims change their name, because they don't want to be associated with this slavery. And it's a pretty, pretty good reasoning. I'm really considering the same thing. It's weird. It's weird. You should think about it. I'm thinking hard about it. I'm going to meditate on that because it's something that should be considered unless you want to forever be attached to that. And if you think even deeper into that, think about this. Revelation 13 says, you know, the mark of the beast, and what it is, a brand, you know, it's a mark of the beast, right? And it says that in your head, so you're only, it isn't anything that you physically see, it's only in your head that you're branded by this name, and the number of your name, what do they always attach to you? Once you get branded in the society with your name, your quote legal name, you also get a number, the number of his name, your social security number, or your citizen number, whatever it is. Revelation 13, exposing more truths. So think about that. Are you going to continually worship your mark in your head, then your name and the number of your name? Worship that or break from it. Let's listen to what else Malcolm had to say.
Well, now, while you don't care to discuss your former name or the name that the slave master gave to your antecedents, it is a matter of record that Muhammad's last name was Poole, Elijah Poole.
No. That's the name that his slave master gave to his grandfather or great-grandfather, but that's not his name.
Well, his mother and father thought when they called him Elijah Poole that that was his name.
They didn't know any better.
Well, if they didn't know any better or not, they thought that was his name.
Yes, sir, but sir...
So what I'm trying to find out is when did he cease to be Elijah Poole and get to be Elijah Muhammad?
In 1931, I think it was, in Detroit, he was taught the true history of our people and made aware at that time that he was wearing an English name, and by not being an Englishman, he looked out of place. And his teacher gave him the name that he's wearing today, Muhammad, Elijah Muhammad.
All right, now when did he become what he purports to be in your literature, the son of Allah?
I've never heard the Honorable Elijah Muhammad referred to as the son of Allah.
The prophet of Allah.
I've never heard him referred to as the prophet of Allah.
What do you refer to him as?
Messenger of Allah.
All right, the messenger of Allah. And I appreciate the correction.
Yes, he says that a prophet is somebody who predicts the future, and he's not predicting the future, whereas a messenger is someone who carries a message that has been given to him by one who authors that message.
Well, now, who gave him the message, and to whom is it supposed to be delivered?
Master W.F. Muhammad. The one who taught him is the author of the message. He gave it to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, which makes him the messenger. And he's to deliver that message of truth and righteousness to the 20 million American so-called Negroes, which means he's to teach us the truth, which will awaken us, and then show us how to live a life of righteousness, which will automatically qualify us for recognition as human beings by all other righteous human beings here on this earth.
Well, now, one other question. With reference to what Mr. Hurlbut asked you a little bit ago, you took a very moderate position of wanting independence without having any hatred for the whites. Do I understand that correctly?
Hatred is not involved in it whatsoever.
I noticed a reoccurring little theme while getting all this footage is that the media portrayed the Nation of Islam as well as the Black Panthers as being racist organizations, which they never were. If you would have went and asked any of them, were they racist, they would have said, no, we just don't want black people to be killed anymore. If that's racist, then yeah, they're racist as hell, because they didn't want black people to get killed, so they must be racist. But other than that, Malcolm has so much great information that was suppressed and distorted, and of course the way the media does now, how they call everything terrorists when really they're freedom fighters, like people like Ed Brown they're going to call a terrorist. I always use Ed Brown because that's something that needs to not be forgotten about. That's something real that's happening and could, it's a powder keg waiting to any moment explode, really. And his Elijah Muhammad, whatever the guy's name, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, who wasn't too honorable, not even because he had all those wives so much as, once you look into what that guy was really about, it just seems something fishy's up, everything seems weird. And why did he always, by he I mean Malcolm, give this guy the credit for everything that he's done. Just because someone shares information with you doesn't make them some sort of savior or something special. They just gave you some good information. And that's how you know when something is a cult. Like, if everyone started worshiping Alex Jones and not just listening to the information that he gave, but said, you know, the Honorable Alex Jones says that blah, 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 9/11, Building 7 happened. No. He might have said, hey, did you see this little piece of information about Building 7? That doesn't mean I worship this guy now. That just means, oh, snap, that's something I didn't know. So this is some good knowledge to know. I'm glad I have this knowledge now. Good looking out. But the Nation of Islam, you'll see, is a straight-up cult that uses Islam the way that other cults use Christianity or whatever else you may have to be its backing, founding doctrines. So let's talk a little bit more. I really wanted to discuss the assassination, but that in itself is going to take more time. So I think we might stick to just getting through what Malcolm's platform was and what he was speaking out about, because it's so much that you can see why the government would have only had gain from killing this person and why the Nation of Islam would only have had gain from killing this person. You know, just go out to, like, brothermalcolm.net. Go out and read the biography of Malcolm X. Go out and just listen to his speeches. Listen to words he said, because they're not going to tell you exactly, but it's going to give you a view of this person, of who he was. And that's what I'm trying to give you tonight. You know, go and just listen to some of his speeches. Let me give you some names of speeches that are really good ones. There's no such thing as a nonviolent revolution. Definitely listen to that one, because he's exactly right. That this is not a revolution that's happening, because a revolution happens when there's bloodshed and there's an exchange in land. And that's what, in the 60s, was very possible could have happened with the black, quote, movement, revolution, civil rights, whatever. But because they deadened that and made it into nonviolent, with Dr. King and other so-called Negro leaders in that time, that's something else good that Malcolm brings up. The fact that Negro actually means an object. It means a black object. It means not a person. That's not something that you consider a person. Sort of like people say Oriental, but Oriental is not used for people. Now, Asians don't find it so offensive. Actually, I do know some Asians who get very offended if you don't say, not even if you're not going to say specifically what country, but if you just can classify them as Asian and not Oriental, because Oriental is what you use for food or a rug or something that's an object. Negro, again, is something that you use for an object, a black object, not a human being. So Malcolm was really exposing and saying things on TV that your average black person or your average white person has never heard. And today you hear these things and you're not so shocked, but you have to think about this in 1963, what the world was like, and people hearing this type of talk was terrifying. It really must have been. Almost like hearing War of the Worlds, but like, now it's black. It's black people attacking.
Now, the other part was with respect to Mr. King and the nonviolent direct action.
Well, I will let Jimmy Baldwin and John Killens and Lou Lomax, the writers, answer that. Speaking right after this church was bombed in Birmingham, Christian church was bombed in Birmingham by Christians too, mind you, and these four little girls were murdered, John Killens and James Baldwin and Lomax and the Negro writers and actors had a meeting at the town hall in New York. And Killen pointed out, concerning these murders of these little girls, said, the killings had raised doubts about the intelligence of the nonviolence in the civil rights struggle. He went on to declare that he could no longer be asked to love those who persecuted and killed Negroes. He also, and the writer, Mr. Handler, who's describing this, said that Killens, it was not clear concerning Killens' remarks to his audience that he was breaking with the, it was clear rather, to his audience that he was breaking with the doctrine of the Reverend Martin Luther King's philosophy that as Christians, Negroes should love their fellow man in a truly religious sense. Now, James Baldwin, speaking on that same platform, said, and I was present during this entire affair, asserted that the American people shared a collective guilt for the persecution of Negroes, much as Germans did because of their silence during the Nazi persecution. He denounced President Kennedy for what he termed Kennedy's lack of passion
in the civil rights struggle. Mr. Baldwin said that there could no longer be a Republican Party for the Negro people as long as it listed a Barry Goldwater, nor a Democratic Party for the Negro people with a Senator Eastland on its roster. He asserted that the federal government acted swiftly and energetically, that unless the federal government acted swiftly and energetically, future slaughter would make Birmingham look like a dress rehearsal. What do I think about King's attitude? King's right-hand man, Wyatt Walker, at King's convention, according to the New York Times on September the 26th, said, we have been duped, meaning these persons involved in the civil rights struggle, of which King is the symbolic leader. His right-hand man says, and I quote, we have been duped, or have duped ourselves, into believing that the chains have been broken, when in truth we have only been chained more securely. Half freedom has in many instances been worse than no freedom at all. Why, don't ask me what I think about their struggle. I can tell you what they think about their struggle. And they are pointing out that it is becoming more difficult every day for the civil rights leaders to keep the masses of black people nonviolent and long-suffering and patient and keep them from becoming disenchanted. Hope that answers your question.
Well, now there's a new party which has started on the East Coast called the Freedom Now Party, an all-black organization. Would you comment upon this and also upon the possibility that the Nation of Islam might begin to turn some of its attention to the political arena in view of the fact that it is in the political arena that Negroes have not been able to in any way get justice, as has been pointed out in your previous statement?
I'm not familiar with the Freedom Now Party. I'm not too familiar with politics, period, only that in the sense that white politicians have usually been very hypocritical where the so-called Negroes are concerned. So I'm a bit disenchanted with politicians and politics. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad is a religious man, and his teaching is religious, and his solutions are religious. The Freedom Now Party, from what I understand, is headed by a man named, a lawyer named Conrad Lynn. Mm-hmm. I know him. He probably means well. Before passing an opinion on what it is he's trying to do, I would like to analyze it and see who's subsidizing him, see who his friends are, especially who his white friends are. And after a careful analysis, if I could conclude that there was no white support, I would be inclined to have confidence in it. But if I saw him leaning too heavily upon his white liberal friends for support, then I'd be suspicious of that too. The Muslims, in my opinion, represent an all-black party. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad pointed out at before 10,000 in Philadelphia on September the 29th at a rally that we were having, that in 1964 the black people should band together and do something about selecting representatives, black representatives, politically, who have the rights and the best interests of the black people at heart, and that we should also unite together and sweep out of office all of the black political puppets who are used by the white power structure to continue white supremacy in our communities.
Like Obama, we need to get him out of there. People, don't fall asleep with this guy, because if you go to prisonplanet.com, you can see a letter from Obama speaking about what he thinks happened on 9/11, that the government wasn't complicit, but he thinks that someone should be held accountable. Well, basically what you're saying then, that the government was complicit, because for NORAD and things like that to have happened, NORAD standing down and buildings falling out of thin air, World Trade Center 7, then the government is not only responsible, but they would have to be complicit, because no one would be able to do such things unless they were part of the government. Your average Joe Schmo nobody would not be able to make Building 7 fall, nor would they be able to make NORAD standing down. Only the government can do that. Therefore, transitive property, A equals B, B equals C, A equals C. Come on, Obama, put it together. So, you just look at these fake whether they're black liberals or white liberals or whatever else they are, Malcolm calls them white liberals, and people are going to hear that and say, oh, see, he is racist because he wants to know who his white friends are. He doesn't like people who have white friends. No, he's talking about the people who are in power that are going to be influencing him, which is the same stuff we talk about in this movement, saying, hey, we have to watch who we're supporting in this Democrat, Republican, whoever, because while they may say that they are on our side, what are they really doing? Are they just the gatekeeper?
In that regard, would you include Congressman Dawson, for example, from Chicago, and some of the people who represent him on the Chicago City Council?
In which regard?
In the area of acting as a puppet.
I don't know what Mr. Muhammad's opinion is of Congressman Dawson. They both live right there in the city of Chicago together. Mm-hmm. I don't know what his opinion is of Congressman Dawson. I'm suspicious of any Negro, be he politician, be he clergyman, or civic leader who is constantly patted on the back by whites. I have a tendency to lead toward the Negro politician who is constantly condemned by the white power structure. This is my thought pattern. I'm giving you an insight of it.
And that's a good thought pattern, because Malcolm knew that the people who was being demonized in the media were the ones who were really talking truth and the ones who were really supporting change. The ones who were constantly being patted on the back and supported are the ones who are going along with the establishment. And he saw that. He was he knew it all. He saw the New World Order.
You, though, mentioned Mr. Lin and saying you'd like to know who his white friends are. Now, I'm wondering if you didn't make a contradictory statement in Muslim terms by using white and friend in the same phrase. That is,
I
to
use
say,
friend in quotes.
I see. In other words, if a black man cannot have a white man as a friend.
He may have a white man who's friendly, but being friendly and being a friend, I think, are two different things. I think there are many whites who act friendly toward Negroes. A fox acts friendly toward the lamb. And usually the fox is the one who ends up with the lamb chop on his plate. The wolf doesn't act friendly, and therefore the wolf has more difficulty in getting the lamb chop in his plate.
I'd like to point out, though, that...
I say that because it is usually if you study the structure of the Negro community, economically, politically, civically, psychologically, and otherwise, it's controlled by the white liberal, mm-hmm. who usually poses as the friend of the Negro, who actually differs from the white conservative in the same way that the fox differs from the wolf. Their appetite is the same. Their motives are the same. It's only their mannerisms and methods that differ.
Mm-hmm. I would agree that no doubt there have been a large number of whites who have posed as liberals and as friends of the Negro and who have time and again betrayed the Negro. On the other hand, I think one could point to a large number of whites who have struggled for civil rights, for equality, and have got little or nothing out of it, other than quite a few bruises.
Give me an example.
Well, the large number of white students who have gone into the South, for example, working for SNCC and other organizations.
Not working for SNCC or other organizations, but working for the white political machines who benefit by the voting efforts of Negroes.
Okay. I'll be more specific. I would cite Herbert Hill, for example, as a kind of person who has championed Negro job rights, for example, in New York City and elsewhere. He has fought the political machine.
First time I met Herbert Hill personally was when they were picketing to stop the working on the Harlem Hospital in Harlem. Negroes for 10 years had to fight the city to get an annex built on the Harlem Hospital. Because in Harlem, we need a hospital more so than anything else. Our people are sick. Plus, we do a lot of cutting and shooting of each other, though we profess to be nonviolent. And Herbert Hill brought his forces out and stopped the working on that site. This is the first time I ever saw him. Then, when work was brought to a halt on a hospital in Harlem, the same was tried to stop the work at the Downstate Medical Center in Brooklyn, which is predominantly white. They were out there for 3 months during the summer. Couldn't stop anything. And I never saw Herbert Hill out there one time. Now, whenever it takes a stoppage of something that's going to affect the white man, you find the white liberal absent. But when it involves something that primarily will affect the best interests of black people and black people only than that white liberal is president. Herbert Hill is the labor secretary for the NAACP. Mm-hmm. And if he was interested in black people, he would prepare a black man with the type of knowledge and understanding of the labor troubles involving black people that would enable a black man to sit in the same position as Secretary of Labor or Labor Secretary in the NAACP. I'm suspicious of whites who join Negroes and always have to be in the lead, who always have to be the head, who always have to be at the top in Negro organizations. Those whites who really have the interest of blacks at heart, let them give some advice to some Negroes and stand on the sideline. But don't join the organization and then get at the head of it and pose as a friend of Negroes.
Well, I would defend his sincerity and his commitment. And more than that, I would say that just because a person is a Negro or a black American does not mean he's going to struggle for Negro rights or for jobs for Negroes or anything else. I think that today you could point to a large number of Negro leaders who have consistently betrayed Negroes in a whole host of areas.
They aren't really Negro leaders. These are puppets that have been put in front of the Negro community by white liberals. These are parrots that have been put in front of the Negro community by white liberals. You can't name me a Negro leader who has been a Negro leader who has been betrayed Negroes, who has not been endorsed, sanctioned, subsidized, and supported by the white liberals.
In every American community, you have varying shades of political opinion. One of the shadiest of these is the liberals. An outspoken group on many subjects. 10 degrees to the left of center in good times. 10 degrees to the right of center if it affects them personally. So here then is a lesson in safe logic.
I cried when they shot Medgar Evers. Tears ran down my spine. And I cried when they shot Mr. Kennedy, as though I'd lost a father of mine. But Malcolm X got what was coming. He got what he asked for this time. So love me, love me, love me. I'm a liberal. Get it? I go to civil rights rallies, and I put down the old D.A.R. D.A.R., that's the Dykes of the American Revolution. I love Harry and Sidney and Sammy. I hope every colored boy becomes a star. But don't talk about revolution. That's going a little bit too far. So love me, love me, love me. I'm a liberal. I cheered when Humphrey was chosen. My faith in the system restored. And I'm glad that the commies were thrown out from the AFL-CIO board. And I love Puerto Ricans and Negroes as long as they don't move next door. So love me, love me, love me. I'm a liberal. Ah, the people of old Mississippi should all hang their heads in shame. Now I can't understand how their minds work. What's the matter? Don't they watch Les Crane? But if you ask me to bus my children, I hope the cops take down your name. Oh, love me, love me, love me. I'm a liberal. Yes, I read New Republic and Nation. I've learned to take every view. You know, I've memorized Lerner and Golden. I feel like I'm almost a Jew. But when it comes to times like Korea, there's no one more red, white, and blue. So love me, love me, love me. I'm a liberal. I vote for the Democratic Party. They want the UN to be strong. I attend all the Pete Seeger concerts. He sure gets me singing those songs. And I'll send all the money you ask for, but don't ask me to come on along. So love me, love me, love me, I'm a liberal. Sure, once I was young and impulsive, I wore every conceivable pin. Even went to socialist meetings, learned all the old union hymns. Ah, but I've grown older and wiser, and that's why I'm turning you in. So love me, love me, love me, I'm a liberal.
You are listening to Save Your Generation.
You are listening to Save Your Generation. Friday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on ReverRadio.net. Biatch.
Those liberals, yes, they certainly are a shady, shirt and shady cast of characters. I don't trust them. You shouldn't trust them. Malcolm X certainly didn't trust them. And what is there? Why should we trust them? They say that they're one way, but then you get them in office, and then what happens? The same bullcrap that was going on before. And the conservatives, they're no better. He didn't trust them either, and why? Why would he? He saw through the left-right paradigm even then. Someone who says that he wasn't a political person, he was a religious person who was speaking from his faith, which is, I think, I'm doing the same. I'm speaking from a faith perspective, which is why I have the views I do about illegal immigration and topics of that nature, because my faith not forces but allows me to see things from a certain perspective, the same way that Malcolm saw these things. And he saw that in truth and in reality, not in politics, how things were. And that's why they killed the man, because he could see through it. And we're going to play a couple more clips about where he's speaking in these discussions with newsmen, but I see we're running short on time, but I did want to discuss a little bit briefly into the Nation of Islam and how it ties into Masonic occult things. And I guess next week we're going to have to, that will be the focus, because there's so much in that too that I don't think I'd be able to break this up and still be give a true picture. You get what I'm saying? There's just so much that I think it's going to have to be two separate shows, but we're going to touch on it tonight after we hear a little bit more about what Malcolm was saying that made the government so scared.
Yeah. Mr. O'Connor.
With regard to that tragedy out there in Los Angeles, I myself refer to it when it happened as the tragic police action, so I am not totally biased.
Thank you, sir.
Coming from Muhammad Speaks, which is the publication of your cult or your religion, Elijah Muhammad referred to the policemen out there, the white policemen, as devils. He said, there is no justice here for us black people. There is no future for us nor our children in civilized America. Doesn't that imply that you're going to get out, or that's his wish that you get out?
If he referred to those policemen out there as devils, who were heavily armed and knew that the Negroes, whom they were shooting down in cold blood, were not heavily armed, I don't think that those policemen themselves would deny that they're devils, nor would any Negro who witnessed such a deed deny that they are devils.
Well, about the other part of it, there is no justice here for us black people. There is no future for us nor our children in civilized America. And I didn't make that up. He said it in his own.
And he's correct in what he says, sir.
Well, what does it mean? Does it mean you're going to get out?
It means the same thing that Attorney General Robert Kennedy means when he says that the number one domestic problem in America is the race problem, that it is almost impossible to solve it. It's almost impossible to give justice to Negroes.
You see where that kind of talk got Robert Kennedy? How long are they going to kill our prophets while we stand aside and look, debating on whether we should be violent or not against it? I think it's time. I think it's been many, many thousands of years now. We see how tyrants act. We see how tyrants work. We see that they only respond to one thing, and that is equal and opposite pressure, the same pressure, as they say, that's been given to us. And that guy, but Bull O'Connor, whatever his name is. You need to watch that entire debate that he has with him. But I can only play a couple more clips from it. But it's incredible. Go find it on Google Video. Go find all the stuff and watch it all for yourself. Go watch Malcolm X Make It Plain. Go watch a movie called Brother Minister. You're not going to be able to find that on Google Video. You have to find the DVD somewhere. But it's called Brother Minister. It's absolutely incredible. COINTELPRO, The War on Black America, all of this gives great information. But that last part, what Bull Connor says, so what does it mean? You're going to get out or what? You're going to get out? Like, people are wanting them to get out? Well, the fact of the matter is they weren't brought here on their own will, but now you want them to leave on their own will? What kind of backwards thinking is that? So what the Muslims were saying, what people like Marcus Garvey were saying, that since you brought us here, we understand you don't want us here. That's fine. We have no problem going back. But since you brought us here, now you provide us a means to get back. Or you provide us a means to go live somewhere here on this land, since we did help you create it. Well, not even help. We did it ourselves. We did it for you. So since we created this land for you, you're either going to give us a plot of land here where we can go live, or you're going to provide a means for us to just go back to where we came from. And to me, that doesn't seem like too much to ask. For 400 years, they built your country. Now you can fix wrong, right that wrong that you did. Or you can be like Bull Connor and say, so what are you going to do? You're going to go back? You don't like it here? Then get out of America. You don't like it? Then get out. Well, you didn't bring them. If you didn't bring them here, I wouldn't be here in the first place. You know what I'm saying? Do you feel that?
I have listened to your leader, at least on one occasion in convention here. It was 2 years ago, and at that time he advocated the separate state proposition of giving the what you call the so-called American Negro a separate state in which to live, to make their own way. Would you explain that philosophy, please? And have you had any support for it from anybody in official ranks?
Your first question first. To my understanding, what Mr. Muhammad has said is that he wants freedom, justice, and equality for the black people here in America, which you agree they don't have. If they did, you wouldn't have a race problem. And he says, if America cannot bring about freedom, justice, and equality for our people in this country, then America should allow us to leave. If we can't get along together, we should be allowed to depart and go someplace where we can set up housekeeping for ourselves. Then he says, if America doesn't want us to go back home among our own people, and at the same time they want to keep us here, since we can't stay here and get along together in peace, he says what America should do is separate part of the country and give us a section where we can live and give us everything we need to get our particular section functioning independently, support us for 25 years until we are able to function independently in a society of our own, and in this way the problem will be solved.
Now, those are both two very intelligent and very plausible, very real things that could have happened, that could have solved the problem. And supporting for 25 years is truly nothing. If you think about for 400 years, 500 years, they supported with nothing. So you're going to take one-fifth of the time, no, not even one-fifth, like one-fiftieth of the time. I think that's a fair trade. You trade 25 years for 400 years, you know, it's not even a fair trade, it's not even close, but it would have at least somewhat attempted to right the wrong. And since you didn't give the reparations of the 40 acres, you take that and say, all right, you estimate the number of black people, you take, multiply that by 40 acres, that's the plot of land that you give them, and let them all live there in kind of like a reservation. Almost like an Indian reservation, you'd have a black people reservation. Just go let them live all there if the whites in America didn't want them to be integrated. Or you provide them all the means to go back. Something had to happen to fix this problem, or else the blacks were going to start a revolution violently and go insane. But the way that they neutralized that was with people with Dr. Martin Luther King. After they saw that the blacks were ready to have an uprising, they said, all right, well, we need to put past all this civil rights type stuff, because that'll make them go back to sleep and think that they're getting freedom, but really they're getting nothing.
A question with respect to a statement which Essien Udom quotes as being on a bulletin board in the University of Islam in Chicago by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. According to Essien, Mr. Muhammad states, up you mighty race, you can accomplish what you willed. Build your future on these foundations: freedom, justice, and equality. What is the definition of freedom, justice, and equality for the black man, and where and when is it to be attained?
Well, take equality first. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad doesn't teach us to associate equality with whites. Equality has nothing to do with whites. We don't want to be equal with the white man. He's not the criteria or yardstick by which equality is measured. He's not in a position to tell us we are equal. It's not his right. It's not his to do. Equality, we want equality. We had equality before the white man was created. We had equality before the white man came into existence. And we want equality whether the white man is on this earth or not. Equality means the opportunity to develop all of our dormant potential, all of our dormant capability. In developing this dormant capability, the right and the ability to stand on this earth on some land of our own and bring about a civilization and a society in which we will be completely independent, complete freedom to take care of the needs, to take care of the wants and the likes and the dislikes of our people, to establish our own nation, our own society, our own heaven, our own future. This is what we mean by freedom, by equality. And justice means, as you sow, so shall you reap. If you do wrong, you'll get wrong in return. And if you do right, you'll get right in return. When you're in your own nation, in your own land, you're in a position to get justice. But when you're in another man's country, in another man's land, under another man's flag, and under another man's government, and under another man's court system, you have to look to that other man for justice, and you'll never get it. And Negroes in this country probably are authorities on that. Now,
to what extent does this formulation approach that expounded by Zionists? They, for example, many Zionists maintain they could never expect justice in the Tsarist courts and the courts found in other countries in Eastern Europe and so on. And they decided that it would be wise to establish a separate state in Israel.
And all of the world powers got together, the white world powers, I should say, got together and helped all of these white Jews to establish a separate state in the heart of a dark-skinned people's territory. And if white people can get together and let other whites, help other whites to establish an independent nation right in the midst of dark-skinned people, and then we don't see where white people should be so much against the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's solution, not of setting up an independent dark nation in a white people's property, but he's asking the opportunity to set up an independent nation in our own, on our own continent. Let us leave America and go back home among our own people on our own land and set up our own independent society. But all he says is that this government, which made us slaves, should supply the transportation for us to get back home and give us all of the machinery and the tools necessary for us to till the soil and establish our own agricultural system to feed and clothe our people, our own economy, and in some way become an independent people among our own people on our own continent. This is intelligent. And Zionists should never criticize.
If anyone listening right now can find me the rest of that clip, please pass it along, because that's all that was there. And he was speaking more on the Zionist issue, and I wanted to hear that, because Malcolm even knew about the Zionists and that whole fraud of these white-skinned Jews moving into some place in the middle of a dark-skinned nation and thinking that it's okay, and then, you know, just bombing Palestinians and things like that. So he saw through even the whole fraud happening in Israel with the Zionists. So what's there to not like about Malcolm X speaking this truth? Well, the United States government certainly didn't like it. Why? Because they are in bed with the Zionists. You know that. And him exposing all of this hypocrisy, this huge fraud that is the New World Order, was not a favorable thing to them. And when he finally spoke out, which is what they say was the straw that broke the camel's back, which separated him from the Nation of Islam, speaking out about Kennedy saying that the chickens came home to roost, which again was just a true statement. The United States, as he said numerous times, goes around the world and kills people, but when it happens in the United States, everyone's shocked, as if they've never killed anyone before. And he didn't say, you know, it was a great thing that happened. He just said chickens came home to roost. And initially, that was my feeling as well. But then you look into it and you see that the United States is behind it, as they're behind 9/11. They're behind all, you know, I can't even say the United States is behind it, because the United States is comprised of millions of people. Millions of people do not carry out these events. It's a small, select, elite group of people who think that they have the right to do whatever they want to us, peasants, slaves, simpleton. But, all right, let's get a little bit maybe into, well, let me play one more clip.
Let's send it back to the
court. Why didn't he say this 3 years ago? Why didn't he say this when all of these sit-ins and freedom rides were very peacefully going on in the South and in other parts of the North? The man didn't say anything until he found out that black people in this country were ready to explode. And as soon as he saw that the explosion then was a threat to the white society, he came up with this mealy-mouthed speech, which is too late, and it's only a speech. We still don't see any actions that have stemmed from it. It's still only in the stage of words.
I think the speech is late, Minister Malcolm X, but not too late. No pronouncement that was that impressive and forthright from a president of the United States.
No one made a better pronouncement than Abraham Lincoln made 100 years ago, and that still hasn't been put into practice. It's still a pronouncement.
Sir, I applaud words for what words are worth. And
maybe that we'll have to see martial law declared in several areas throughout the South.
Run that by me again.
And maybe that we'll have to see martial law declared in several areas throughout the South.
You mean a military dictatorship?
Well, I don't choose to describe it as.
It'll take a military dictatorship to bring black people and white people together in the same house. It'll take a military. If all of the token integration which you've seen in the South, and it's only tokenism, and if this has caused the bloodshed that it has, what do you think white people, both North and South, will do on the basis of real integration? If you only ask for crumbs, and the granting of those crumbs causes bloodshed, what do you think will be caused when you ask for a loaf of bread or a bakery in which to bake your own bread?
Well, let me continue with...
Go ahead, Mr. Romney.
Mr. Bass, you can't compare the revolt of farmers with the revolt of black people in this country. Because if the farmers are revolting over more or less corn, which is in no way involves the Constitution or what this country is supposed to stand for, but the black man in this country is supposed to be getting freedom. The country is supposed to be based on that. Democracy, freedom, justice, equality, and all that stuff that they teach us in school. And now, why should the black man have to go to court to get freedom when a white man in this country is free when he's born? Why should the black man need some legislation to prove that he's a human being when you don't need any legislation to prove that whites are human beings? So I make this point because, to come right back to my initial statement at the outset of the program, you will never get real freedom and recognition between black and white people in this country without destroying the country, without destroying the present political system, without destroying the present economic system, without rewriting the entire Constitution. It would be a complete destruction of everything that America supposedly stands for before a white man in this country will recognize a black man as something on the same level with himself. And this is why the Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that the best way to solve the problem is complete separation. Let the black man, those of our people in this country who want to, have a country of our own where we can go and stand on our own feet and solve our own problems and not have to continue going to court or waiting for some politician to legislate for another 100 or 2 years to prove that we're human beings.
The true goal of this country has never been hid. It's been out in the open for people who could see it. And martial law, a military dictatorship, is what they've always wanted, and that is what they're going to try to push. And maybe maybe that was the cause of the uprising. Maybe that's why they allowed some of it to take place, because they thought that that would be an excuse to bring in this martial law. And it's incredible that even back then they had their talking heads, people on television, to push that agenda and make it seem like a feasible option for something, that it's a good thing, that martial law is to help. It's because there's so much chaos and dismay that we need martial law, we need this dictatorship. So just think about that, and we are almost out of time. So when we get back, I started this off with a Farrakhan quote. I'm going to play something else from Louis Farrakhan, because it says a lot about what this next show is going to be about, which is the murder. Who assassinated him? Why? I think we heard today a couple of reasons why the U.S. government, the CIA, the FBI, and you can, through the Freedom of Information Act, go read the documents that they had on him. They were undoubtedly had him spy tapped, had him watched and wired, but why? Because did you just pay attention the last 2 hours? Did you hear the stuff he was saying? This wasn't being said by anyone, much less someone with dark skin. And that made him a target and a threat. But why did the Nation of Islam dislike him? Why would they have wanted him dead? So when we get back, we're going to use this last 5-6 minutes I have left of the show to explain why the Nation of Islam, and play another Farrakhan, whatever. All right, let's just do this. This is Save Your Generation. Did you know that? Friday nights, revereradio.net. And if you like this information that you got tonight, probably you haven't heard this information on any other show before ever. Because even though this is Black History Month, the only ones talking about black people or black history is your mainstream media. Why doesn't the alternative media give their respect to the people who came before us? And the mainstream media, really, when they present this, they present it in a way that Farrakhan said, that they give you the by any means necessary and the I have a dream, but they never tell you really about this person. So hopefully after hearing all this tonight, you've got a better understanding of who Malcolm X was, and not just the propaganda and not just the psychological warfare that they tried to play by making everyone think that he was this violent racist when he was the exact opposite. So make the connection, see the correlation, and always remember first and foremost that mainstream media gives you brain damage.
Do you think that smoking, because I got to tell you, I'm a former drug user, and I am not, I just did so much damage to my body and my brain. Do you think that smoking, because I got to tell you, I'm a former drug user, and I am not,
I just did so much damage to my body and my brain.
Reverse the brain damage. It's not too late. Listen to Save Your Generation. Friday nights at 8 Eastern. Only on RevereRadio.net. Corporate media equals brain damage.
Brain damage ever since the day I was born. Drugs, what they used to say I was on.
They charged Jesus with sedition. Didn't they do that? They said he was against Caesar. They said he was discriminating. Because he told his disciples, go not the way of the Gentiles, but rather go to the lost sheep. Go to the people who don't know who they are, who are lost from the knowledge of themselves, and who are strangers in a land that is not theirs. Go to those people. Go to the slaves. Go to the second-class citizens. Go to the ones who are suffering the brunt of Caesar's brutality. And if Jesus were here in America today, he wouldn't be going to the white man. The white man is the oppressor. He would be going to the oppressed. He would be going to the humble. He would be going to the lowly. He would be going to the rejected and the despised. He would be going to the so-called American Negro.
Thank you so much for listening to Save Your Generation tonight, and for listening with an open mind and an open heart. And hopefully I gave you a little bit of insight into the man, the mind, and the spirit of who they call Malcolm X, El-Haj Malik El-Shabazz, and into some of the reasons that his political stance was so threatening. Now, you say that this is a free country where everyone is allowed to speak their mind and say what they want and have a true democracy with different political systems, but why was his such a threat? And I hope that you understand and you can see it now so much more clear, and you don't just think of him as by any means necessary, and you don't see him as a violent racist. You see him for truly what he was, which is a patriot. He was a patriot fighting, standing up for the Constitution, for our civil rights, for equal rights, for all humans. And while he might say things like white structure and blame it on the white establishment, it's because the people who were in power were white. That's undeniable. You can't fault the man for being truthful in his speech. That's who was oppressing the people. And if it wasn't, then why weren't the black people equal and free as everyone else were? And by integrating, that did not make people free, being able to sit down at a lunch counter. And that's what he was trying to get the point across. But with everybody asleep, by thinking they were free because they were able to drink out of the same fountain, that was the establishment's way of quieting this revolution, because there could have been a revolution. I don't think there could be another revolution ever again in this country, only because their technology is so advanced that there would be no way that any group of people could ever get together or try to meld something together like that without them knowing and without them infiltrating it. But in the 60s, the technology wasn't so advanced, and there was a possibility. There were so many black groups about to have an uprising, and they were scared, and they needed some way to silence this. So what did they do? They killed Fred Hampton. They killed Malcolm X. They killed Dr. King. They killed whoever was speaking up in such a way. But in this case of Malcolm X, you'll see that there was an extra involvement. There was an extra element, because he didn't just have bad blood with the CIA and with the FBI and with the United States government. He had bad blood with the Nation of Islam. Now, why? Why would they have bad blood with him? And why? Well, we're going to get into that next week, because we don't have enough time to discuss that tonight. But I did want to give you something to look forward to, something, a very rare clip of Louis X, Louis Farrakhan, addressing the Nation of Islam at what is called Savior's Day, which is a special day where they honor Elijah Muhammad, or I don't really understand completely. I do understand, however, that the Nation of Islam, what they call the Black Muslim Movement in America, is a bastardized version of the true Muslim Islam religion that follows the book, the Quran. It's like an offshoot of it. And when you look into some of who these people are, like Louis Farrakhan, you find out that they're also Freemasons. A 33rd degree Mason. Now that's very interesting. Why? I didn't know that you could be in a different, because the Freemasons don't let Catholics in because of their religion, but apparently the Nation of Islam is a pre-approved religion for the Freemasons. So next week, we're going to get so deep into this, you will have no idea how intertwined Freemasonry is. Well, of course, just look around. Look at the back of the dollar bill. Look at the way the Washington Monument. Look at all our leaders, why they're all Freemasons. It's no different with the Nation of Islam. And you know, the Freemasons, if you've ever heard about the rituals they do, they say that if you betray this establishment, this unity that they have, they will kill you, because you've let the brotherhood down, so you can't live anymore. And that's what we have here with Malcolm X. And Louis Farrakhan is, I don't know why people haven't called him out on this. Maybe people haven't ever seen this clip. Maybe people don't go and research this stuff. But I'm going to play you a clip right now. We're going to end the show. Since we started the show with Farrakhan, maybe I'll even play that one over again. Just because you see that this person is such a two-faced liar. How can he say one thing so beautiful and nice about someone, and then, well, let's just end the show with that. You guys think about it. Hopefully this will get you to tune in to Save Your Generation next week and hear all the stuff I have to say about the Freemasons and how the Nation of Islam work together, because they are the same thing. Just like Joseph Smith was a Freemason and then he started Mormonism. These Freemasons create these other religions in order to control everything. They want to have it all. So the only way that you can have your hands in everything is if you're the one that starts it. Got it? Hope you all are ready for next week. Tune in Friday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Save Your Generation, and donate at revereradio.net. It keeps us on the air and it keeps us being able to expose these things that have happened throughout history for the past hundreds and hundreds of years and continue. So thanks. And, oh, visit our sponsor, Phalon.com. That's Phalon.com. That also helps us stay on the air. Bandwidth, we give out free archives. You don't see a lot of places doing that. So keep them free by donating to revereradio.net. Stay tuned. You got live Rasta Gnostic and Rob Revere coming up on the Friday night fight live club show.
What did you got to say about it? Did you teach Malcolm? Did you make Malcolm? Did you clean up Malcolm? Did you put Malcolm out before the world? Was Malcolm your traitor or was he ours? And if we dealt with him like a nation deals with a traitor, what the hell business is it of yours?
Death is better than living on this earth with the unbelievers among us.
He that loveth his life shall lose it, and he that hateth his life in this world shall keep it unto life eternal. I know thy works, that thou hast a name that thou livest and art dead. Be watchful, and strengthen the things which remain, that are ready to die.
If you'd like more information on the Save Your Generation broadcast, or if you're just sick of all the lies, visit tiredofbeingalive.com. That's tiredofbeingalive.com.